Kinky Friedman, welcome back to KUHF Houston Public Radio. I know this time you're coming back for yet another book tour. Is this number 23 or 4 on your list?
Something like that. You know, you write one book, you've written one book. You write two books, you're an author. And you write 23 books, you're a hack.
Help me understand the process of writing. I mean, I know that you got a lot of thoughts in your head, and do you get up in the morning and think, okay, today I'm going to write, or does it just organically appear? How does that work?
Well, it's an index of an empty life, Paul. That's the first thing to understand. Anybody who can write that many books, you know, probably doesn't have much going on. How you do it? Helps to be an unemployed youth, so you have a lot of time to write, and you just let different ideas percolate through your head. And I mean, I never planned to be a writer. I always wanted to be a country singer.
So. A dream that started as a kid, I understand.
That's
you
right.
Always wanted to be a musician.
And any kid, of course, Johnny Gimbel's mother, the famous fiddle player, he told his mother, "Ma, when I grow up, I'm going to be a musician." And his mother said, "Well, make up your mind, son, because you can't do both." So I don't know. I wanted to be a musician, and I guess that's a little trick God plays on us, so I've become a best-selling novelist.
Well, you've had some success, and clearly the latest one is being pretty well received. The titles of your books are as often as entertaining as the content. Tell me about the title and the subtitle of this book.
Well, this book's called Texas Hold'em, How I Was Born in a Manger, Died in the Saddle, and Came Back as a Horny Toad. Kind of my take on Texas, along with great cartoons by John Callahan. Really sick, truthful cartoons, I think. And the book is, it's a good one for spiritual Texans, maybe, or Texans by inspiration, people outside of Texas that want to know what Texas is all about.
Well, full disclosure, I'm a native, born in Amarillo, lived all my life, or the first 18 years of my life in Amarillo. Then I realized that there were other cities that I needed to visit and see, and my sister went to Dallas, and I came to Houston. In
all the garden spots, huh, Paul?
Well, you know, and I can tell you a thousand reasons why I wouldn't like Houston, but this is my home, and I know that you spent a good bit of your time here in the 50s. I guess West U was a residence.
West University Place was a great little, I'd say, a middle-class neighborhood back then, a beautiful place. And now I think it's a yuppieville, pretty much, right? Thousands of yuppies are coming, Kemosabe.
And you moved to Austin in the 50s, I think, is what you were saying?
I don't remember. Well, I guess in the 50s,
yeah,
late
50s,
right.
Boy, what a different place that city's become.
Oh, yeah, it was a sleepy, beautiful little town. But, you know, this, as Joseph Heller says, every change is for the worse.
Tell me about the book. Now, I did a good bit of reading of this, and I found myself, as I do with most of your stuff, smiling, occasionally chuckling, and at one point during this book, I actually guffawed. You tell the story of Pat Green when y'all went to the wedding.
That's right.
And your description of not just being swerving the road drunk, but so drunk that you forget your children at the bus stop drunk. That's
right.
Something along those lines. That line just knocked me out. And your descriptions of common events is maybe one of your best skills. And I really enjoyed this. Tell me why this book and now. What brought this book out?
Well, this is kind of my charge to keep, you know, if you want to know about John Kerry, you can read his book, or George W., read his. This will tell you what I'm thinking, particularly as a candidate for governor. By the way, there was another good line that Pat Green had, which was every time he leaves a bar, he always asks himself the same question, can I puke in a straight line? But Texas Hold'em is not about poker. It's about playing a poor hand well, and how you play the game of life, and how you remember the things that got you there, and always remember that the important things aren't really things.
Well, you talk, and it's interesting, the tone of your writing takes a real sweet tone when you talk about Uncle Tom and Aunt Min.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously Echo Hill is a huge part of your life. And those, when you talk about family, you can tell that it really hits home with your own style, and it hits the reader too. I think it caught me off guard almost. It's the edge is not quite so sharp when you talk about Mom and Dad.
The Hummingbird Man, yeah, yeah, that's gotten great response. That story, there's a little story about my mother feeding the hummingbirds in 1953, and she died in 1985, and my father and I took over the hummingbird program together. And he died a couple years ago. And so now, really, I'm imagining my father talking to the little boys at camp about hummingbirds and telling them that there's 300 species of hummingbirds. It's the smallest bird in the world and also the fastest and the only bird who can fly backwards. And the kids think that's really great. The notion of flying backwards really appeals to them, and they'd like to try that themselves, they say, and so would I.
You talked about going to the Minger. San Antonio is one of my favorite places, too, and I've always enjoyed the hotel. You tell the story about encountering Sally.
Yeah.
And that was a, I mean, this is a real story? This was not...
Oh, no, that's totally
true.
I mean,
it really happened to you.
You know, I've heard ghost stories about the Minger for years, but when I saw Sally White, I didn't know who she was. I mean, I saw this ghost. I was sitting up in bed. I got up. I started walking toward her. She was still there, unless I was sleepwalking or something. And she just kind of glided into a wall, I mean, as I was walking toward her. But she had this red kerchief on around her head, and wearing the silver bracelets, and she was like a gypsy dancer. She actually was a mulatto who worked there in a... She was kind of... Her common-law husband killed her. She was a chambermaid or something in the hotel. And when I went to Ernesto, the manager, who's my friend, I said, "Man, I saw this woman dancing, and she looked like a gypsy or something." He said, "Oh, that's our Sally, you know." And I said, "What?" He said, "Well, a lot of people..." He said, "Was she wearing a red kerchief, a red bandana?" I didn't tell him that. I said, "Absolutely, she was." And he told me, he says, that he gets calls all the time from people that are saying, "This maid in the hall, that's late at night, I called her, I needed some help or needed some room service or something, she just walked right by. This is not Sally, this is another maid, just walked right by and didn't even so much as look at me." And so Ernesto asked him, "What uniform, what was she wearing?" So, well, she was wearing a lace, a little lace thing on her head, lace. And Ernesto said, "Well, the maids here haven't worn laces in 80 years. Not in 80 years. They haven't had lace uniforms. So take it from there." I was convinced that she was a prostitute or something that my friends had sent into the room as a joke or something. Oh, that's how real she was. So, I mean, it's not like a vision. It's just a real person there in the room 1 minute and the next minute. And it took, I don't know how long, but, I mean, this was not a dream. And I don't question that the place is full of ghosts. The Manger, and it's a gorgeous place.
It's got a great soul to it. There's no question about it. Let me talk to you about your life in music. I know that, you've lived a dream life for a lot of us who have been music fans. You've had an opportunity to play with and know and, you know, just enjoy personally a lot of legends. And your description in the book about Jerry Jeff, one of my favorites. I mean, back in the 70s, Jerry Jeff was a minor religion for me. I mean, it was the Viva Terlingua period was a wonderful experience. The description you gave in the book about his writing Bojangles, Mr. Bojangles, was delightful. And that was truly, obviously, a historic song. And your ability to share his writing story really touched me. And I know that you, being a musician, you really have a lot of respect for not only great people, but great musicians and great writers especially, right?
Yeah, and I'm struck by Mr. Bojangles and that Jerry Jeff said it was just another song. I mean, he did not know this is it, this is my genius masterwork. He didn't know that. And it was just wrote it on a yellow legal pad like Richard Nixon used to use. And he did adopt dogs from the pound every couple of weeks. And because he was homeless, they were homeless. So they often ran away again, and he said at least he was giving them a second chance. And he was trying to get that internal rhyme scheme from Dylan Thomas that he'd been reading all this Dylan Thomas stuff. So, "Met a man, Bojangles, and that kind of thing. And it just, the story's amazing. And then I asked him why he screws the song up all the time when he sings it now. Why does he change it so much? Because it irritated me, because it's perfect. It's a perfect song. And, of course, he gave me the obvious answer, which I hadn't thought of, which is to discourage the audience from singing along.
Which was... Jerry Jeff is one of the few people that can get away with messing up his own music,
right,
and for the right reason. The music scene in Austin has has always been very vibrant, but it's so commercial now. Has it lost some of the original innocence and maybe some of the original soul that it once had?
Well, that's going to be inevitable.
Yeah,
but
natural.
But on the other hand, you mentioned Pat Green earlier. This whole Texas music scene is unique to Texas. I mean, you go to Kansas or go to New Jersey, they don't have somebody that can pick up a guitar and suddenly you got 40,000-50,000 people coming to a concert. And they don't have as vibrant a music scene. This is unique to Texas. And when you look at the great Texans, I mean, I want to name some highways after these people. And I'm talking about Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson, Buddy Holly, Bob Wills. They did try to name a toll road after Willie, but the Republicans shot it down because of dope, I think, in the legislature. And Willie later said that he didn't want a toll road named after him anyway. He's been a working man his whole life, and maybe an electric chair would be nice or something like that. They could name that after him.
Well, you had mentioned you never should get past your raisins.
That's
in your
right.
Book, and
never
that,
get
and
above your raisins. And by the way, this vest was given to me by Waylon Jennings more than 30 years ago. It's hanging in there. It's one of my main wardrobes.
He's one of those musicians that the more you know about him, the more you appreciate. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to spend much time with his son or
not
enjoy
very
his
much.
Music. The kid's got some. He's got
Shooter,
some of the
yeah.
genes. I mean, he truly is the real deal. And his father was, you know, a genius and clearly ahead of his time and didn't mind being different. Actually, celebrated.
Waylon
that.
Was one of the first who I think kind of winked at the audience. I mean, you know, he knew this was all bullshit. Basically, he knew that, and he wasn't afraid to let the audience know that. A lot of the other country performers were. When we look back at those guys, some of them were pretty great, but they all, some of them were pretty pretentious. They were stars, and they knew it. And Waylon knew that that everybody's part of one big soul.
One revelation in the book that got my attention was the, and I didn't know this. I'm surprised I didn't know this. The missing show, the Austin City Limits issue, that seems to me to be perfect. I mean, it's almost as if you scripted this. This is a perfect. I mean, it's frustrating, ultimately, obviously, and an unresolved issue. But it seems to me, what are they thinking? They've got this treasure that they're just, you know,
well,
locked down.
Well, yeah, Austin City Limits and I felt I was sandbagged at the time. I felt very much like Lenny Bruce or somebody, in that we needed that show. It was at a time when it would have been great to have it air. And they told us, just let it all hang out. You do your show like you were in a club somewhere, and we'll edit it. And we'll sanitize it for television. And instead of doing that, I opened the Austin newspaper and saw all about this horrible show that we did, you know, that was way over the top. And they didn't edit it at all. They just canned it. They didn't run it. And looking back at it recently, it's pretty tame, I got to tell you. Not necessarily tame, but by today's standards, it's right on target.
All right, let's talk about this race. Now, you've always had an interest in public affairs and music and things in your life, but running for office, boy, that seems like that's a pretty big step. Why do you want to do that?
Well, basically, I've been able to achieve a lot of my dreams, and I want to see that others, especially younger Texans, get a chance to achieve some of theirs. That's probably my reason for running. And it also angers me to see the big parties, the Democrats and Republicans, monopolizing democracy. And it bothers me that they spent $100 million on the last gubernatorial race. And do you know what percentage of eligible voters voted? Let me give you an example. 58% of eligible voters voted in Iraq, 65% in Minnesota when Jesse Ventura ran. 29% of Texans voted in the Perry Sanchez race, meaning 71% of us didn't like the choice of plastic or paper. We wanted something else. So now we're going to give people something else. And I promise you, if we get more people into the process, which we're already doing, we're up to 20,000 volunteers on the website, kinkyfriedman.com. So if we can get that up to 40% or 45%, you're talking to the governor.
Obviously, the goal is to win. You don't get into a political race.
We're not Gary Coleman. We're not making people think and having fun.
Yeah, I was going to
say. We are making people think and having fun, but that's not the end goal. It is to win, and it's to get these scoundrels out of here.
Well, you make a comment in the book. People say, you know, so is your candidacy a joke? And then you say, well, you know, have you looked at other candidates?
Have you looked at the Texas legislature, for instance? That Capitol, that building was built for giants, and it's inhabited by midgets. These guys are dreadful. Two issues I care about very much. One is biodiesel, which may be the way of the future, and Willie Nelson and I strongly think that it is. Renewable fuel. Gasoline's going to cost $1 a drop in 10 years. Let's stop the Saudis from playing the jukebox and the rest of us dancing to the tune. The answer is biodiesel. Not in every vehicle, but at least in the buses of Texas, as Willie's bus already runs on it. Whole cities in Europe run on biodiesel. So the legislature voted, they tried to ban biodiesel. They weren't successful, but that's where they're coming from. Also, they tried to take funds away from programs that would get high school kids to college. Now, I don't know if you know what our ranking is in high school kids getting to college, but I can tell you it's 50th in 50 states. We're also first in the dropout rate. So we're last in education, first in executions. As Dr. Phil would say, how's that working for you? So I can't screw things up any worse than they already are.
You mentioned the volunteers. You've had, maybe not be accurate to call it a groundswell at this point, but you've had a lot of interest. And it may be just kind of people peeking over the fence going, what the heck's he doing now? How do you fund a major campaign? Because, you know, hey, money is part of the deal. You got to raise some cash.
Every journey of 1,000 miles begins with a cash advance, Paul. The trick really here is getting to the petition drive, which occurs in March. Texas makes it very difficult for an independent to get on the ballot. You need to collect 50,000 signatures right after the primaries. You got 30 days to do it. Anybody who votes in the primaries on either side can't even sign the petition. We're the only state that has that law. So it all favors the incumbent. But once we're on the ballot officially as an independent candidate, I'd like you to know that that will be the first time in 146 years that that has happened. The last candidate was a guy named Sam Houston. That's a long time between dreams, and it's what the Republicans and Democrats are really all about, is to suppress the vote. They were pretty happy with the 29.3% last time. If we come roaring in at 43% this time, what do you think their reaction of the career politicians is going to be? Do you think they'll say, hey, look, democracy in action, this is wonderful? No. Before the votes are even counted, you're going to hear them say, who the hell are these people? Where did these people come from? That's going to be their reaction, and they're going to be very surprised. And they're going to be out of office.
People are going to ask you questions about school funding and, you know, this, that whole issue. I know that it is a serious issue, and our kids are not being educated well. We're not funding the system like it should be. What's the solution?
There's three or four things you can do. I say no teacher left behind. That means I'm getting rid of teaching to the test, and teachers know what I'm talking about. Teaching to the test has plunged us into a race for the bottom with Mississippi, which we are winning. We're 49th now. So we get rid of teaching to the test. I appoint only people who have seen the inside of a classroom, for instance. No more MBAs coming down there, supervisors and administrators and education department people that don't have classroom time. Well, that's simple. Two other things will help. One is a thing called Slots for Tots, which is a new program. The idea is every bar owner and club owner in Texas that wants to have 5 or 6 video poker terminals in their place can have them. And this is not the Texas lottery. This is well monitored. A small portion goes to the bar. A small portion goes to local charities. But the lion's share will go to Texas and to the education system. That will generate, it's estimated, $3 billion a year. That would be a great help. And it would also keep us from having to legalize casino gambling, which is the other way to go. And the other idea is, by the way, the legislature is not exploring any of these. The other one is to transfer sports funding out of the education budget and give it to the corporate level. Now, they do this in Georgia. They've done it for 3 years very successfully. In other words, let Nike pay for the stadiums or the athletic director. I'll tell you something that happened in Livingston, Texas. I talked to a teacher there that I ran into at the L.A. airport. She says that they hired a new athletic director for their high school in Livingston. $80,000 a year the guy makes. Well, the three principals weren't making that much, so they bitched. So they raise all the three principals up to 80,000. Next week they cut the teachers' benefits. All right, this is not unique. This is what's happening. So, I mean, I'm the teacher's friend, and teachers will have an advocate in the governor's mansion. And believe me, if the teachers are suffering this bad, so are the kids.
Why do you think they just get, the legislature, gets into this rut where they find one solution and they just beat it like an old dead horse? They cannot, original ideas are almost forbidden.
They lack common sense. That's the key. They lack common sense. You can lead a politician to water, but you can't make him think. And that's why musicians could better run the state than politicians. That's not a joke. Beauticians could better run it than politicians. So as an independent candidate, I ask myself, WWWRD, what would Will Rogers do? And what he would do is get rid of these politicians, these career politicians that are clogging up the system, bring some original ideas into things, such as the border. Our idea of the five Mexican generals, suggested by Joaquin Jackson, is brilliant. Some form of it will probably be used in the future. At least if I get elected, it definitely will. Which is dividing the border into five jurisdictions and appointing a Mexican general over each jurisdiction and giving him $1 million, which we hold in a bank account for him, from which every time an illegal alien comes across through his jurisdiction, every time we catch one, we withdraw $5,000. Now that's an idea. That's cowboy logic. And you know, I asked my Hispanic activists, what do you think of the five Mexican generals plan? I thought they would be insulted, or they would think it was ridiculous. And these are really, these guys are, you know, they work down in the valley, and they're very, very politically active. They said, you know, that's crazy enough that it just might work. So it's an idea. Having a listed phone number, the first governor with a listed telephone number that actually takes calls himself for certain hours every couple of days, talks to the people, keeps the customer satisfied. That's a new idea. The criminal justice system is a mess. We have here, we got a man, Max Sofar, who's in this book here. Max has been on death row for 23 years. Now, there's not one shred of evidence anybody can come up with to show why Max is there, except for a false confession that he recanted immediately. And, I mean, most states won't bring you to trial on a false... I could tell somebody I killed you, but I shouldn't go to trial because of the Lindbergh case. That's why California won't bring a guy to trial just because he confessed. They have to have evidence. Well, Texas apparently doesn't need evidence. And I'm telling you, the governor could have fixed Max Sofar's case, or the Harris County DA, Chuck Rosenthal. Either one of those guys could have fixed it. They didn't. They didn't want to investigate it because they're not real truth seekers. They're not real crime fighters. I guarantee you there's a killer out there that killed those kids in that bowling alley, and it's not Max Sofar.
Yeah, you make a pretty compelling case for him in this book, and it's
what
it's
a guy. Borderline mentally retarded guy who's on drugs and is a police snitch and will confess as a confession machine. After he signs a confession, he said for killing three kids, he says, "Can I go home now?" The cops knew what they were doing. Max already confessed to robbing the bowling alley the night before, and they already had those guys in custody. They knew he didn't do that one. So they said, we don't need that confession. That's okay, Max. Now, that's just what that is clearing the docket, clearing the boards, because there's a lot of heat on you to get somebody, and they got somebody. When you serve 23 years in solitary on death row, what do you tell somebody when it's clear they've made a mistake? So what do you tell them? Whoops.
Yeah, we're
the system
sorry.
Made a mistake.
Oops.
Yeah.
Last question about the campaign. Size up the competition. Obviously, governor and I guess Carol Keaton is...
Carol Keaton, Land Rover, yeah. And the governor and...
Who else? Is it just you three now?
I guess.
Tell me about... size them up.
Well, I don't think it's our place to be worried about the opposition too much. We're not really running against the governor. We're running against something bigger than the governor, which is politics as usual. And my goal is to get rid of politics as usual and to make that Lone Star shine again, to bring back the glory of Texas. And that can be done. It needs to be done. I don't want people talking bad about cowboys like that DA in Aruba did about you can't come down here like a cowboy and try to, you know, it's being used negatively. The cowboy's never been a bully. He's always stood up for the little guy. And believe me, I'm for the little fellers, not the Rockefellers.
I'm grateful for your time today. I really appreciate your information.
Well, thank you very much, Paul. May the God of your choice bless you.